Hello, lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning into the Member Podcast today. I'm your host, Jordan River, for Financial Month, September 2020. Loving Financial Month and loving exploring these 12 categories one at a time. Each of these months, we dive deep into a category, and one of the episodes we do on this podcast is always with the founder of Lifebook and my father, John Butcher. How's it going, man?
It's going great, Jordan. How are you doing?
Doing excellent. Doing beyond excellent. Financial month, interesting month. Yeah. You know, we were talking off air. Why don't we just jump into the conversation we were having off air? We were talking about wealth creation. We were talking about the differences between currency and wealth. And we were talking about how kind of stunning it is that people still don't have a clearly defined value system to their wealth. They still don't understand money, how it's created, what it is. And you even put that in the Lifebook program. I remember the old script and the new script talking about you really had to go back, unlike any of the other categories. And you kind of gave more of yourself in that video than the other categories, I would even say. But you were still very even-handed. And you basically explained, hey, you know, this is what money is. Do you feel that people are still severely lacking in their, I don't know, financial literacy? And also, do you feel that maybe we're headed towards better financial understanding?
That's a great question, Jordan. What I think that is getting better is abundance and access, access to wealth, access to opportunities to create wealth, abundance. We're living in a golden age. This is my belief. I don't put this on anybody else. Everybody, you know, can view the world any way they want, process the world any way they want. That's the game right there. How you process the world is going to have a massive, that's the world you live in, basically.
Right.
Right. I live in a golden age. I live in an age where if you measure just about any area of human endeavor, we're doing better than we've ever done in the history of our species before, across the board. And so that's the world that I live in. And then that's the world that I think a lot of people, I mean, that is true. You can also make a case for the exact opposite.
But when it comes to opportunity, though, I don't know if you could make
it. Opportunity,
I don't even know if you could argue against that.
Unprecedented in human history, no question about it. So there's way more abundance, way more access, way more opportunity for every single one of us. But I don't think that that necessarily means that our financial literacy is going to increase.
Right, or we're any happier. That's a good point. But
absolutely not. They do not teach any of this in school.
Right.
Right. So you can't learn it in school. You can go to school for economics and finance, and you know, but most people don't. They don't teach this to normal people. And even I shouldn't say that because I've never been to college for economics and finance. But the bottom line is just getting down to the bottom of what money is. The difference between money and wealth, right? And that's important.
Yeah.
As we described in the Lifebook program, because I felt that it was important in this particular category because people are so confused and there's so much negative energy surrounding money, and it's such an incredibly important topic.
Right.
It's gonna have such a vast impact on your quality of life. I felt that I had to go a little bit deeper than I went in most categories and really share some of what I've discovered about what money is, where it comes from, and how wealth is created. So, you know, I talked about the fact that money is nothing more than a standard of value. Currency is a medium of exchange. It allows us to trade our goods and services more easily, but it's not wealth. Money is not wealth.
Right.
Wealth is tangible. Money is intangible. It's an intangible concept. Now, actual dollar bills are tangible, but the concept of money is intangible. It's an idea.
It's kind of imaginary. We all have to agree to believe
So it's like this. Listen to how crazy this is. I'm going to put my blood, sweat, and tears into building a house for 2 or 3 years, and my house is going to be real wealth. That's real, true, tangible abundance. That is a valuable thing, right? And when I go to sell my house, I trade it for a bunch of paper.
Yeah, 100,000 papers. Yeah.
For 100,000 papers. I just traded my house for 100,000 papers.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do that because I can take that 100,000 papers and buy anything else I want with it. It goes from tangible to intangible. And so it's friggin' complicated, man.
Right.
You know, it's complicated and it's hard to get.
Don't you feel that points to really the importance? Well, Lifebook is really the ultimate tool in doing this, but your financial life really, I don't want to say should be, especially on the Lifebook podcast where everybody's life vision is different, but I feel that it's very healthy to have your financial category pointing as a means to an end. If your job is to just rack up the papers, I don't usually see that ending well. You really should be thinking about it as a means to an end and investing in real wealth, whether that is more tangible wealth, like you said, good investments, or like you were talking about off air with me, the investments of your relationships, the investments of your love life, your travel life. These are investments those are the investments you take to the grave beyond to the next life. You know what I mean? Those are the real memories.
100%, Jordan. And it's very interesting where Missy and I are in our financial life right now. What you just said is so incredibly relevant. First of all, we're moving our wealth right now from the digital world, meaning your money that's in the bank is basically what that is it's ones and zeros on somebody else's computer.
Right.
That's what your bank account is. Your bank account, ones and zeros on somebody else's computer. And you've got your little dashboard and you can dial into their computer to see how you're doing, but that's where it is, right? We're transferring as much as we can from that to the physical world, to tangible property.
I know you've always liked gold.
it's gold, it's real estate,
land,
it's our home.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Investment in our quality of life.
That's
completely
cool, man.
I'm not comfortable with any kind of financial instruments right now. And this is just me. I mean, I've never been savvy when it comes to financial instruments. That's not my game. I believe that production is the root of all wealth. And that's the truth. Production, creation, products and services.
Services, exactly.
At the end of the day, before you can take a company public and create a new product called that company's stock, that company had to do something. That company had to make something that other people wanted to buy. Before you can rob somebody of their wealth, that wealth had to be created somehow.
Right.
That's one of the connections that most people don't make. Wealth is not a natural resource. Wealth does not grow on trees unless you plant those trees and harvest those trees. Wealth has to be created before it can be redistributed, before it can be stolen, before
taxed.
It can be looted, before it can be mooched, before it can be taxed.
I love that.
It has to be created by human
That's
beings, right? One of the things that people really miss. So we want to have a closer relationship with our wealth right now. We don't want it to be some ones and zeros in somebody's bank account. Never liked stocks, never liked financial instruments. That's one of the things we're doing right now. And then don't get me wrong, I would never recommend this for anybody.
Yeah, this isn't a recommendation.
It is not a financial recommendation. But what you said, Jordan, about, you know, spending your life chasing those little green pieces of paper and getting to the end of your life and looking back and you know, is that going to make you proud of yourself and you know,
right,
happy and fulfilled? I sort of have been developing this new philosophy over the last couple of years that I only want to spend as much time and energy and hard work and focus making money as I need to in order to get the exact life that I want to live. And I don't want to put a second more into that project than I have to in order to get the life I want to live. So it becomes incredibly important for me to know what that number is. Here's what, and this I would recommend to life bookers, because when I sat down and thought through this with Missy, it was absolutely profound and it changed our lives. So we're clear on our life vision. We know exactly the life that we're building right now. And this is the second giant life vision that we've built together. We know exactly how much that's going to cost, or at least roughly, I shouldn't say exactly, but we know. Therefore, I need to know how much money I need to pay for that. I want to wake up and spend the hours of my days doing exactly what I want to do in the moment. I love making stuff. I love being productive. I love being creative. Absolutely love it. And I love making money. But I don't want to wake up and have to make money, like have to focus all of my attention on making money any longer than I have to pay for the quality of life that I want to pay for. Like once that job gets done, I want to play with my kids. I want to friggin' hang out with my wife.
100%.
I want to go for a run on the beach, right? So that's what I'm focused on right now. And here's the thing. Once that all gets paid for, I'll still make money, but I'm not going to wake up in the morning and focus on making money. I'm going to wake up in the morning and focus on the creative, productive mm-hmm. projects that I want to engage myself in, and money will be a byproduct of that creativity. So I just wanted to share that concept with you.
Yeah, that's great.
But if you know what your life vision is, if you know how much it's going to cost, then you can roll up your sleeves and go after it. But I'm not sure that it makes a lot of sense to spend very much more time over and above what that quality of life is going to take to build, you know, focused on making money.
So
I just don't, I don't see how accumulating those ones and zeros or those little pieces of paper add much to the quality of your life over and above.
Yeah.
Right. Over and above what you've defined that you want to, how you want to spend the hours of your days. So that means if you want to travel, if you want to go to great hotels, if you want to, you know, be on a boat or whatever, great. Go ahead and plug that in. But after that, I'm not going to spend my life chasing paper. I'm not going to do that.
I think that's exactly right. I think it may be a little different in the beginning when you're grinding and when you're getting started and when you have energy for that, right?
You're in your building years, JB. You are in your building years. I'm just now transitioning from my building years to what I think is going to be a more philosophical, contemplative stage of our life. You should be friggin' kicking ass every single day.
Well, some people get locked in that grind, right? You can make a neuro pathway in your brain and you can get locked in the grind. And that's definitely not where you want to be. You want to be able to remain flexible. But there's probably a lot of new life bookers who really don't fully understand your story. And I don't want to take too far of a left turn here, but, you know, all those years ago when you and your brother were living in a shack behind some friendly Native American's house that he let you stay in, and your roommates are rats, man. Like, you've seen... You've seen the highs and the lows of it. And I'm not joking. That's the truth, right? Like, you did have a roommate that was
100%.
So like you've seen the highs and the lows of it. So for you to say that now after, you know, coming from that and then all the way to the peaks, and then that's pretty profound, man. You've really seen it all. You're not one of these guys who, you know, woke up with a trust fund or one of these guys that lived impoverished your whole life. You've seen it all is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I've been really poor and I've been really wealthy. I went from, you know, being on government assistance when we were young and just really, I mean, not enough money for Christmas presents or anything like that. Like we were, you know, I've traveled the world. I've been to, you know, third world countries, emerging nations.
So there's levels to the poor game for sure.
History.
Holy
there's levels
crap.
To poor. I'm not going to sit here and say, right, our poor are the richest poor in the history of the world. And still, you know, especially if you take a look at history, I'm not going to sit here and say that we
But
were,
you're also
you know,
always downplaying it, man. I saw some pictures. I've seen this stuff. You guys were poor. You guys
no,
were
we
poor.
Were, absolutely. And then when my dad was in his 40s, he finally hit his vein. Dad's an artist, right? And he finally started doing artwork that people started freaking out over. And that was what it was, Jordan. I realized that I've got a very simple financial philosophy at the end of the day. The more you give, the more you get.
Wow.
That is the fundamental wealth creation philosophy. It's not financial, actually. It's wealth creation. So basically, wealth starts inside of you. Wow. It starts with a talent or with a thought, with an idea, with a vision. It starts with a gift. It starts with a mission. And your job is to get whatever that is, whatever the best inside of you is, your job is to get that outside into the world. Well, my dad was an artist. Hmm. He knew what he wanted to be from the time he was 5 years old. He never considered doing anything else with his life. And he tried and tried and tried and tried. And he finally got a job as an illustrator for a Christian magazine, you know, where he's actually putting food on the table with his art for the very first time when he was in his mid to late 30s. And then about 10 or so years later, not even that, I think might have been more like 6 or 8 years later, he finally started painting these adorable little children with teardropped eyes, which ended up becoming the Precious Moments brand. And so, but that was inside of him.
Yeah.
That genius, those talents that allowed him to do that, that was all inside of him. And when he started bringing it outside and giving it to people.
People went nuts. It's the most special thing to them, yeah.
Giving, right? Then it started coming back to him. So, and you know, I created Lifebook. I created Lifebook when I was an adult. And Missy and I had to really talk about whether or not we wanted to share it. You guys have heard that story before. We were very reticent to put it out there, but we ended up giving it because it was given to us.
Wow.
So we ended up giving it to the world. And it's the same thing. I shouldn't say all wealth, because it's gotten a little bit crazy. You can rob a bank to get wealth. You can rob a bank, right?
Right.
But that wealth had to be created by productive human beings before it could
somewhere
be stolen.
Somewhere down the line. Somewhere down the line.
Somebody had to do something that was so valuable to the people around them that made their lives better, made their lives safer, easier, funnier, happier, whatever.
Yes.
That they were paid for that, right? And so that's my philosophy. The more you give, the more you get. So I guess what that asks you to consider is, what's the best role that I could play when it comes to creating value for other human beings? Am I in the best place I could be in right now? Is the job that I have right now the very best vehicle for me to share my unique talents and my unique abilities and create value for other people and earn a profit proportionate to the value I create, which is the wealth that I am able to amass for myself? Mm. It's a win-win situation.
Mm-hmm. You challenge life bookers to examine that closely this month as we dive into our finances?
That's exactly what I would do. I would love for life bookers to, you know, just ask yourself, am I playing the best role I can play to create wealth? Am I contributing in the highest way that I can contribute right now? Am I in the channel that allows me to express the best that's inside of me for the benefit of others? And therefore, that's going to come back around. It's the law of karma. What goes around comes around. Mm. You sleep in the bed you make. That which you sow, you shall also reap. The more you give, the more you get. It's a friggin' law of the universe. And that's what controls wealth creation.
Wow. Yeah. No, that's a good point. You're right. That same law has appeared over and over and over in a lot of different places. That's a really good point, man. Powerful stuff.
There is a different way to say that in every single philosophy and every single religion, but it is present in every major. I mean, it is really, truly a law of the universe. So, you know, it's interesting. Your brother and sister, Jade and Justin, are to the age right now. Jade's 20 and Justin's 16. And they're to the age right now where now's the time for them to be thinking about what they're going to do. So they came to us about 6 months ago, both of them. And separately, and it's like, Mom, Dad, we're ready to roll up our sleeves and, you know, and start thinking about how we're gonna get money in the
right
bank, because our kids are fiercely independent, and especially Justin at 16. He knows beyond a shadow of a doubt that when he is able to support himself as a young man, that's when he doesn't have to answer to anyone anymore. That's when he's able to really run his own.
That's
life.
True. No, that is the difference. You're right.
And right.
I think that's an interesting measurement of adulthood, because some people never, never have that experience and never have full independence and autonomy in this world of the free market. And it's
exactly
a shame.
Right.
I think a lot of times they do themselves a disservice and don't get that character, that incredible, incredible character of operating and self-esteem of operating in the free market.
That's 100% right. And that was exactly the advice that we gave them. I mean, going down that path is one of the things that builds your character.
Totally. And failing too, builds your character.
Jordan, I'll circle back around to the decisions you made when you were a teenager that are still having positive repercussions in your life today. But I want to just finish this up with Justin and Jade. So basically, we said, okay, kids, and we did this separately. We want you to give some serious thought to the things that you're good at, your talents, the things you love to do and the things that you're good at, the things you really enjoy. And then how many ideas can you come up with to create value for other people using those talents and skills and passions? Write it all down and come to us, and then we're going to analyze that. That's basically what it was. So Jade comes to us with this big list. Mom and Dad, I love kids, and I'm good with kids. She's a baby whisperer.
That's sweet. Yeah, she is so good with kids. I didn't even think about that.
Baby whisperer. Are you kidding me? Think about Juju, man.
Yeah.
All Juju wants to do is hang out with Jade.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she does right now. You're so right.
She's an incredible artist. She can paint, like, not just paint. She's a great illustrator. She wrote down all these things that she's great at
sweet.
And that she loves to do. And then we started making lists of all the ways she could apply those talents And then we did the same thing with Justin. Once you get that done, once you've defined your passions and your talents and really brainstormed some of the ways that you could apply those talents to create value for other people, then you have to ask yourself, okay, what are my goals right now? Hmm. Should I choose the easiest, fastest way to cash flow? Should I choose that? Because I could get this one right here up and running in 2 months and have some money coming into one of my checking accounts. Or should I go to school and roll up my sleeves and dig deep and really go into one of these areas? Should I start it? Where are you in your life right now? And what do you want to see happen? Do you want to take advantage of a really good short-term thing and get something going so that you can do a stair step? Or do you want to say, this one right here is what I want to dedicate my life to, like my dad. This is all I care about. This is all I want to do. This is what I'm doing. I don't care how long it takes. This is the direction that I'm going. It's an amazing, really amazing exercise to do. And life bookers, if you haven't done that exercise, gotten really clear on how you love spending your time, what you're good at, and how you could create value for other people using those skills, I would really recommend that.
That's awesome.
And then just ask yourself, am I in the best channel right now? Am I contributing at the level that I'm capable of or that I want to? That's another thing. We don't all need to spend every friggin' waking hour with our nose to the grindstone trying to make a buck. You know, there are other things in life other than that. So you got to really hit. If you decide you want to be a millionaire or a multimillionaire, well, then you're going to have to really roll up your sleeves and do some work. Mm-hmm. If, right. You know, like other people I know, want a little bit more, you know, casual life than that, and they don't need a lot. I think those two things, doing that analysis and also asking yourself, what is the exact quality of life I want to create? How much will that cost? Those two things are really, really valuable when it comes to wrapping your head around this financial category and deciding how to move forward through it.
I think that's exactly right. You hit the nail on the head, but also, especially when you're young, but you're never too old also. There's no wrong answers, right? Like you just take a step. Don't be paralyzed by, right? Like you take a step and you may fail, and that's part of the process. I think where people go wrong is they think, I don't want to make the wrong decision. I don't want to choose the wrong answer. I'm not sure there is a right or wrong answer. You just got to kind of go with your gut.
No, you're 100% right, Jordan. There is no such thing as a mistake. There are only learning experiences.
Right.
And I don't think, I've never heard of anybody in this category I think that failure is a prerequisite for success here. Not something that may or may not come. I don't think you can achieve success without first experiencing failure and learning from them. I don't know anyone that has had that. Right? I just don't know anyone.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Wow. Good exploration of this principle.
Let's talk a little bit about you, man. You did. Here's what you did when you were, you did two major things when you were a teenager that basically set up your adult life and your financial life. The first thing you did, Jordan, was you recorded two full length records. You and I are the only two in the family that have made full length albums. And that's a year long project. That's a serious friggin' thing.
Thank you, man. Yes, yeah, it's all I did.
You're both really good. And therefore, you developed an expertise in audio.
Yeah, so I'm using the same recording program.
Exactly.
Yeah, the same exact program.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And the second thing you did is you went out there to learn. You know, you went out there to California for the Green Rush, and you wanted to learn the marijuana business. You arrived a little bit late, but the skills that you developed doing that first major entrepreneurial thing, plus doing your first major artistic thing. You're still riding that wave 10 years later, man. Yeah.
I don't talk about it a lot on the podcast, but yes, incredible experience in the medical marijuana industry on the West Coast, and really shaped me in a lot of different ways, from my health and wellness to my view about where I want to live. Yeah, absolutely, man.
Getting your ass kicked in a business that you thought was going to be easier than it was.
Yes, 100%. No, succeeding and then experiencing a price drop and then getting into an ancillary business of podcasting and then leading to the Lifebook podcast. I mean, I would say you have to take Bruce Lee's advice if you don't want to continually run into walls. You have to be like water, because everything is moving so quickly. It's hard to dig in any category. I think you have to go with your gut. Realize there's no one wrong answers, and be like water and just try to flow as best you can.
You got to engage. You got to engage. That's what makes it all happen. You engage.
Mm. You engage.
So that's what it is, man. You're 100% right. You've got to say, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not worried about making a mistake, because even if I make a mistake, I'm going to learn. There are no wrong answers, and I'm going to just do it. I'm going to engage and see where. You engaged in life. You found out what you were good at and what you enjoyed doing. You found out how to use those skills to create value for others. And that's how it's done, Jordan. And which is why I'm super proud of you. And
that
makes me feel like a good dad, because I'll tell you what, it's not easy to ingrain these concepts into kids, because you don't see this around you.
I don't even know if you can. And I'm glad that you were there to support me, man. That's why those things happened. I'm sure I would have done other less grand things, but why I was able to get all those things done is because you always supported me. So I think that's really the cycle, right, of improving self-esteem and more value creation and improving society, kind of one producer at a time. But I don't know how to ingrain that. That's a very good point.
I'll tell you what. Here's what I think about that. My dad was the first person in his family that had ever been, that ever got wealthy, and he got wealthy late in life. But what I saw all my life with my dad was he was a super hard worker. He was always a hard worker. Before he made money, he had to keep three jobs to keep food on the table for his seven kids. Starving artist, you kidding me? It's the worst career he could ever choose. And then when it started to happen, it didn't happen all at once. I saw the whole thing. I saw it go.
Right.
I saw what he was doing. He was using his talents to create value for other people and earning a profit proportionate to the value that he created. So it's like, I watched that and then I did that. And I thought, same thing. You watched that in me.
Too. Yeah, no, that's right, man. That's kind of wild.
You watched that in me and then you did that. And so that's the way that I think it needs to go, Jordan. And that's why I think, things like this podcast are important, because when you figure out anything in life that most people haven't figured out, that's difficult to figure out, I feel like it's incumbent upon you to share it with the people that are interested in hearing it. Please don't go beat people over the head with it and force them to listen to it. But if they're interested in it, if they genuinely want to know about it, it's our job to share best practices.
Just like LifeBook. Yes.
Yeah. It's one of the ways we can lift up the society around us, which is in desperate need of lifting.
You're 100% right. Listen, enough about me. I'm getting uncomfortable here. Let's move on to, I did want to make time for a couple quick life book questions that just keep coming up that we have to address here. So I was going to say someone, but many people have been inquiring about your art investing history. You've talked about it a little bit. I know that you've made some massive gains. I remember all those years you getting those big, thick art catalogs and sitting by the fire and reading every single page of them. Two times a year, four times a year, or whatever. And you never really took it as your main squeeze. But can you tell us just anything highlights from your career? Whether it's like big trades that you made, wins or losses, whatever you're willing to share.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'd say. The art market is different than any other market in the world. And it's obviously the same as every other. It's a market.
Right.
So it's about the value of something is only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it. But that's a free for all right there. The art market's only been around. The contemporary art market's only been around since the 70s. It was invented in the mid 70s.
Whoa.
Pretty much. Before then, there were no major auctions. There were, the Mona Lisa probably in the mid 70s. I remember reading in the Guinness Book of World Records that the Mona Lisa was estimated to be worth $4 million. And when I was in high school, and that was like a hard thing to wrap your head around, how a painting could be worth $4 million. Mm. Years ago, at the November sale, the contemporary art sale in New York at Sotheby's, a painting the size of the Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci, it was a portrait of Christ, sold for $450 million.
Whoa.
Which is, that's up there. I don't think that there have been five buildings in the world that have been built that have cost
insane, man. Well, I mean,
if it's 20 by 30 inch painting
of Christ by Leonardo da Vinci,
of course, that's a magical object. Jeez, but my point is, what drove that 100 times difference, right, from the 70s to the, was this contemporary art market that basically grew up. So it's a real thing to convince somebody that a little bit of pigment on canvas is worth, you could build 10 skyscrapers, literally 10 skyscrapers for that amount of money. So the art market is nothing for people to mess around with that don't know what they're doing. You don't get into the art market to
make money. To yeah, no, you were.
You don't get into it. To
you
buy
were an
sell.
Artist. You were a fan. You were a big time fan.
That's why I can do it, because I've been in art all of my life. Like you were talking about the art auction catalogs, Jordan. There are two major auctions a year, and the two biggest cities are London and New York. They basically control 90% of the art market.
Wow.
There's two seasons, there's spring season and the fall season. And, you know, these are the major sales. And I've read every art catalog for the last 30 years. I've really, and I've also just got a gift for it because my dad's an artist and I've been in art all my life. Right. But you don't buy and sell art to make money unless that's going to be your full-time job.
100%.
You're going to probably get your ass handed to you.
It's like those sports bettors where I know these guys, they know stats day in and day out. They study stats all day, every day. And if you get into sports betting to make money, you're either going to A, lose money, or B, spend all your time listening to podcasts and studying statistics and algorithms and stuff that you don't have a life anymore, which is fine if that's what you love doing. But I remember it seems to be the exact same thing. But if you love art and you're reading these catalogs anyways, man,
It was amazing. So I didn't only love art. I was passionate about it. I was obsessed by it.
That's what it takes.
When I didn't have a pot to piss in, I still bought all the art magazines that I could.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden it's like, you mean I can actually own an Andy Warhol? I can actually own a Damien Hirst?
And then you did. Right?
And then I did.
Yeah.
The best thing about investing in art is that you get to put it on your wall and enjoy it every day, as opposed to having a stock certificate in your safe and zeros on somebody else's computer. That's the best thing about investing in art. And, I got in right after a correction in the late 80s. And some of the paintings that I've bought have gone up 100 times. And it's crazy. I've mostly sold short. What my art consultant told me early on is, John, you do not want to get into this game for the investing aspects of it. What you got to do, yes, if you're going to spend six figures on a piece of art, you've got to have the confidence
and the research behind it. Yeah,
know that's a solid investment.
Yes.
But you're not buying it to make money. That's the wrong reason to get into this business.
Wow.
What you want to do is buy it because you love it, you've researched it, it's solid, and if you do that, and if you hold it until you've evolved to the point where it's not your taste anymore, you're ready to let it go, whatever, that's the way to sort of navigate through this crazy territory. But yeah, I'll give you some crazy,
give me some numbers.
Yeah, so here's some numbers. I've bought I've had three Gerhard Richters on my wall that I've paid just over $250,000 a piece
for a painting. Wow.
That are one of them I paid exactly $250,000. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot even believe that I've got a friggin' Richter on my wall. He's one of my favorite artists. That painting came up for auction a year and a half ago and sold for over $15 million at Sotheby's.
Oh my
God. I bought
it
for $250,000. I sold it a couple of years later for just barely more than I paid for it. And it's worth $15 million right now.
Oh my God.
It's happened to me five or six times. And you know, I started investing in art when I had enough money to be able to do that, enough disposable income. And as our conditions changed, we started companies. We basically moved that money from art into some of our companies. And my God, I wish I would have done that a little bit less, because some of those paintings.
And you swapped art too. Yeah, I remember you would get rid of paintings and get new ones. And
yeah, it was a dynamic process. And you know, now Jordan, you know, I feel like when I was your age and a little bit older than you, I was in those building years. I was accumulating.
Wow.
Now, Miss and I are at the time of our life where we absolutely still love our material possessions. our beautiful, wonderful magic objects. We love our homes. We love our furniture. We love our artwork. We love the life that we're surrounded by, but we're getting less and less attached to physical objects and more just sort of dropping in. Mm. And here we are in Hawaii, dropping into the experience of living in paradise and spending all of the time together
on the beach.
Yeah, exactly. We're just sort of getting less and less materialistic as we get older. And that's not to disparage materialism at all. Materialism is what makes the world go around. It's why we're in such an abundant society. We love it, but it's a different time in our lives.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what else I think it is that place plays into that. Hawaii is the perfect place for that. They're like, what are you talking about? Six figure paintings, man, just relax. Like, here's a pineapple. It's exactly.
So you're 100% right, man. You can live here with almost no money. And the locals do. They absolutely do. The island that we live on is half Hawaiian, which it's got the highest percentage of Hawaiians. And it's like, look, when you can grow your food in your garden, in your backyard, and you've got chickens running all over the place, we got amazing beef on this island. Put a friggin' line in the ocean and get as much fish as you want. We got 80,000 deer. Go pick a coconut, grow mangoes and papayas. It's like, and this is what I'm saying. Maybe it's Hawaii that's tweaking me a little bit, but I'm like, why the hell should I work 1 minute more than I need to earn the money that I need for the quality of life that I want?
I love it.
I want to know what that number is. I want to cut off my friggin' work as soon as I've achieved that number and go to the beach with my wife.
Fishing, man. Oh my God. I love it. I absolutely love that. We need to squeeze in this last question. And I know it's a really good one. Best investment, but we're talking best life investment here. And I love how they framed that, man, because you've made some good ones. I'm thinking, it's running through my head. You invested in a world-class gym that has brought so much health and vigor to people. I remember training in there with like a real MMA fighter at one point who had like a real professional fights. The indoor pool, so many good memories as a kid, and even you adults, you know, going crazy playing in the pool during the Halloween parties or whatever. What's the biggest, best life investment you've ever made?
Well, since I didn't pay a dowry for my wife, if I would have paid a dowry for Missy, I would have had to consider that. And I would have had to consider that.
You're listening to too much Genghis Khan history.
Yeah, her parents did not charge a dowry of like a chest of gold. So since I didn't have to pay a dowry for that marriage, which would have been the best investment ever, I would say, Jordan, it's down to two things. It's either the homes that we've built, and includes the city places, which added a tremendous amount to the quality of our lives. So the home gym, the garden, or the money that we spent on travel over the years. Mm-hmm. It would have to be one of those two things. The homes that we created were just unbelievable. We built oases that nurtured us and that protected us from the craziness of the outside world, and that were just so amazing to raise you kids in those incredible, beautiful environments. But also, we saw the whole world. Miss and I went to almost 100 countries. The two younger ones, you know, lived in 12
countries. Yeah, they've been to even way more places than even I have. I remember back in the day, I remember the boat trip around the south of France. That's a life-changing experience, man, for everyone involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those are the two greatest quality of life moves we ever made. So if you're you know, really analyzing what are the best financial investments we have, look, when you get to your deathbed,
right,
and you think about having a stack of paper or the trips that we've taken with you kids and the homes that we've lived in, I'm going to default to, I think that those financial investments are way better than just stacking up ones and zeros on somebody else's computer.
You said something about being proud of your life or something. And that's the exact words that Dr. Joel Wade talks about. When he talks about eudaimonia, he says a life you can be proud of. And so that's really amazing when you think of your framing your finances in that way. Very, very cool, man. Wonderful, wonderful exploration today. Thank you.
You know, with money, you got two things, Jordan. You've got the puzzle of how to make it, and then you've got the puzzle, if you're lucky enough to make it, of how to use it.
So true.
Those are the two things you got to figure out. How to make it best is reaching down inside of yourself and figuring out the very best way that you can express the beauty that is inside of you in service to other people. That's how to make it at the most fundamental level. And then how to use it is to improve the quality of your life as much as you possibly can, according to your own standards and values. And so that's what this category is about. It's an accelerator. It's an absolute accelerator. So, you know, Life Bookers, we wish you all the most financial abundance that you can create. Well, I shouldn't say that. We wish you all the
exact right amount. I love that. Great ending point, man. Thank you so much for today's podcast. This was great.
I enjoyed it a lot. Thanks so much.
All right, all you Life Bookers, have fun this financial month. Stay disciplined. We'll talk to you next month and the month after that and each and every month as we explore the 12 categories together. This is John Butcher and Jordan River Butcher signing off, saying have an extraordinary day, everyone. We'll see you next time on the Life Book Member Podcast.